Welcome to Emotional Sobriety.
Alan's checking in from New York. Tom is checking in from his usual home base of Tennessee. And I am in a, it looks like a total madhouse. I'm in like a storage room at my girlfriend's place. She's been kind enough to let me commandeer for the next hour. For the purposes of, you know, this podcast, it's a very elite office with like clean lines and, you know, elaborate, immaculate shelves. But in actuality, there's like 200 pairs of women's shoes in here all around me. So how's everyone doing today? How's your emotional sobriety?
I'm better now that I know that that when you're at your girlfriend's place, she just stores you.
I'm like Woody from Toy Story. You know what I mean? Every time she leaves, I come to life. Yeah. You know?
I'm good. I just finished doing an online workshop. You get this, Alan. It's like doing 7 hours is easier than doing 2 hours. You know, it's like working inside a small amount of time. And but I think I did pretty good to this. And I want you both to know, and Patrick actually already knows this, but I want you to know, I was up late last night. I outlined this entire workshop that I did, and I used the outline through the whole thing, and I got through it. It gave me a place to come back and anchor.
Having attended the workshop, I can say that it really came to life when you were interacting with the different participants, you know, when there was a real like point, counterpoint, you know, like you have a real intuitive way of when somebody's presenting you with their lived experience. I can see it. There's like this immediate chemical reaction and you're able to kind of address, you know, whatever the thing is. And
that's interesting you say that, because this is something that Alan and I way have in common. And back long before the pandemic hit, it's like one of the reasons we wanted to go on the road together and do some stuff, because it was just like we just love that spontaneous part of that. Just you know, I think I probably sent you the flyer that I made just before pandemic. I was talking to Alan and we were trying to figure out a workshop to do. And I just said, I just want us to go to some treatment centers and just talk about shit that matters. And Alan goes, all right, let's do that. Work up a flyer. And I go, for what? He goes, for shit that matters. It's like, you know, and so I have a flyer. I'll send it to you, Patrick. It's like, it's just called Shit That Matters. and it's basically two old psychotherapists are come sit in your treatment center and talk about things. Cause that's what I really would love to do, is that interaction stuff. Is, you know,
Patrick, nobody hired us.
Yeah, that was
no. We got not a nibble.
But unfortunately, COVID hit at that point.
And yeah, so
you know, I come to this back to this topic a lot about the upside of COVID. Not to trivialize, you know, all the horrible kind of like the pain and the loss of life.
Yeah,
and
the silver lining. Yeah,
yeah. This would not exist, you know. And a lot of like the virtual dimension of recovery, you know, that's emerged, you know, as a result of people having to isolate during COVID. I just feel like again and again, I'm reminded of, you know, from a crisis emerged all this opportunity that like now, a lot of people were able to jump on and were still benefiting from it.
In this workshop, you know, we were just in, Patrick, the group was talking about just how grateful we are that we could, you know, the geography didn't have to get in the way of us having a group. And we definitely are spread all over the place. And you're right. Maybe there was another way we would land there, but I can't imagine what it would be. And it's like, I'm very grateful for that.
Shout out to Amy, by the way, at your workshop, who said that she's been listening to the podcast and really enjoying it. Whenever I hear about a new podcast listener, I get so stoked. You know, because I never have a sense of, you know, I check in on the analytics from time to time. But
well, it's good. It's good to hear about that, because you know, otherwise we tend to refer to our listeners in the singular. So it's good to know that there's another one.
We got one.
Yeah, Amy was very kind about the nice things she said about our podcast. I appreciate that.
How you doing, Alan?
I'm a little tired from traveling today. You know, I realize that I've come a long way with my leg, but when I'm walking on the streets here in New York with that on, that man, and I've got my cane, so I didn't try to brave this without it, but I have a long way to go.
Oh, man, that's because that's what you do when you hit New York. You throw your shit in the hotel and you take off.
Got a long way to go. Just the streets, they're just all broken up and repaired and nothing straight. Everything's like this. And so, you know, I'm like wobbling down the street going, trying to catch one way or the other way. So that's been tiring this morning, but I'll probably take a trip when we're done. Other than that, I think things are starting to coalesce in my life, come together. Had the final, well, I think will be the final mediation with Jess yesterday. And I think we finally come to some understanding about some issues that were outstanding. And I think it's lining up pretty good that I should be divorced here within a month, which I'm excited about. I'm glad to get.
Congratulations. That's a lot to get through.
Pining for her and wanting to keep the marriage together, right? Which is where I was at the beginning, just devastated.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, my God, you know, what's going to be the next chapter in my life, man? Mm-hmm. 72, are there going to be any other chapters? And, you know, now I'm seeing that there are a lot of possibilities in terms of what's next.
The person who doesn't initiate the divorce also has to decide to leave the marriage. You know, because I you've probably seen that too. I've worked with people that are, you know, are divorced, but they never left their marriage, and it was 20 years ago.
Right. They never get divorced. You're right. And that's a very important part of the process that I've also focused in on, Tom. And, you know, I remember this one guy that was divorced for 5 years, and he says, "I'm still feeling like I'm betraying my wife when I go out on a date."
Mm-hmm.
I'm not there, so I'm gonna.
No, I guess. I remember a guy that was hanging on and was still. It hadn't really made the decision to leave, and then, you know, then they didn't thought about it, but we were doing a pros and cons list, just even though his wife was long gone, it's like, and I said, well, let's put that at the top of the list. Your wife is gone. It's like that's one reason to get divorced. You know, your wife's gone and she's not coming back. So, but you have to decide. You have to make the decision. Yeah.
Well, it's filled with a lot of grief, man. I mean, letting go of all those dreams that are shattered when that comes to an end. For me, it was, and then, you know, it's even complicated further about, you know, I mean, listen to this. I mean, having children. Yeah. So she's laying in bed with me 2 nights ago. She said, "Dad, I got a question for you." I go, "Of course, honey. What's your question?"
Mm.
She goes, "Why did you get married if you and mom were going to get divorced?"
Wow.
Jesus.
Good one.
Checkmate.
Good. Jot that down. That's a good question.
Doesn't make sense, does it, honey? She goes, "Dad, it makes no sense to me." Right now, I'm sitting here thinking the same thing, honey. It doesn't make any sense to me either.
Validation, man. That's what we need. We don't need somebody to paint over things and make everything okay.
But I didn't know what to say to that, Tom. I mean, I really was.
No, there's.
I would have made some analogy about gambling, probably. You know what I mean? That all of life is gamble, and you're always kind of betting. And the odds are shifting, and you make the best choices you can with no certainty about what the outcome is going to be.
So you're turning CeCe into a little gambler.
No, my God, Patrick.
No to you, Alan. Keep Patrick away.
Yeah, that's a red flag right there.
Hey, CeCe, I got some dice here. You want to play?
We're going to work on probability, CeCe. There's six sides in a dice. There's two dice. All right, Patrick, no babysitting.
Yeah, no, done deal. But I would love to come over and watch Encanto again one of these days, because that's a really good movie.
Great movie.
You know, somebody...
Oh, yeah, that was on last time. Yeah.
Somebody was walking down the street, and somebody started singing We Don't Talk About Bruno as I walked by, and that's such a good song. I was humming that for, like, the rest of the day.
Song.
Yeah. Well, this would be a good opportunity to pivot to relationships, because that's... the theme for loose theme, very loose for today's episode. And I've got a relationship to offer up I've discussed it before on the pod with my ex-girlfriend. She's going through different kind of like financial issues, housing issues, now physical health issues. She's been like diagnosed with some things and, you know, mental health things. And so there's this person that's kind of in the rear view that I rarely interact with, but she pops up from time to time, and she just popped up recently. And more in the foreground is my current girlfriend, who things are getting more and more serious, and we're becoming more and more kind of integrated into each other's lives. And I've gotten to a point of loving her now where I'm afraid to lose her. You know, it's that kind of level that you get to where like starts to
invest,
be like,
invested. You feel your invested. Heart's invested. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she is a very, my girlfriend Sue Ann is a very no bullshit, very, you know, a highly intelligent and intuitive person. And she called it actually this morning in between podcast and workshop, interesting schedule I have, where she said that, you know, there's like a thread of codependency between, you know, my ex-girlfriend and I that has persisted. You know, like, no matter how much distance, there is an aspect of her inappropriately reaching out for support and whatever, different kinds of sounding board, whatever you want to call it, and when she should be kind of drawing upon other resources. And then there's me volunteering that help out of a codependent need to be needed, I suppose. And anyway, the way she all laid it out, I was just checking boxes. I was like, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And I felt like validating her take on all that would just seem like I was placating her. Like I was just kind of doing like I've been doing with this past relationship, which is just punting it, try not to really confront what it is, delay. But anyway, I'm a codependent like guy. And this is my relationship with my ex-girlfriend was unhealthy while I was in it. And now that relationship's over, there are strands of unhealthiness that continue to kind of,
it didn't become healthy once you ended the relationship.
Yeah. And like, and I don't want to screw up this very wonderful and kind of like, I don't know. There's just so much, people growing, as Alan always says, like inherent in this setup. And I just don't want to sacrifice that for the sake of kind of tending to this thing that's not really helping. It's not helping my ex out. It's not helping me out. It's very painful, you know, because I don't think anybody's getting what they want out of it. So that's my current emotional sobriety tightrope walk that I'm doing right now, and at least one of my relationships.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, when you said that she reached out and shared all this with you, did you mobilize yourself to help her, or what did you do?
The best I can think of to do was my sister has the same illness that she was diagnosed with. And I've recently started to get a pretty good relationship with my sister. And so what I offered was that, like, I can put you in touch with her and maybe she has some advice for how to grapple with this particular thing. But that was like, I felt like that was the best I could come up with to help. And I also told her, you know, I just try to be nice. It was over text message, but like, you know, cause that's the thing is every time I talk to her, I feel like I shouldn't be talking to her. You know what I mean? But like, I feel
that's
bad
but what you did, you gave her, that's very tangible. You gave her a very tangible resource with your sister. Just the idea that's you know, and didn't you know, it's a handoff.
Yeah.
So where do you feel you were codependent?
What was that?
Where do you feel you were codependent?
Yeah.
Not telling her. I suppose I'm concerned that I should be drawing a hard boundary and just really just like relieving myself entirely of any communication
and that's because
because it's upsetting to my new partner, and I don't want to lose her.
Right.
Maybe
So that,
maybe that's punting. I don't know. It's
it's not punting. It's making a decision. But see, I don't think that there's, I don't know how listening and giving her feedback on what she might try is threatening a relationship with your current girlfriend. I mean, I can understand she might see that as a threat, but do you, but you're not interested in going back at all, are you?
No, I'm very happy to be out of my last relationship and with this new person. And I just, you know, I have a relationship with some others in recovery that are kind of, that dabble in the same waters where, like, you know, I don't know. It's this all gets a little muddy for me sometimes because, like, we are in touch with sick people. We ourselves are sick people at various stages of recovery from our sickness. And I am just trying to figure out, like, I try and leave as many doors open and I try to say yes as much as I can to anybody who's trying to flag me down because they're sick.
Well, first
and
of all, I'll be a broken record about you, Patrick. It's like, if you want to call it various levels of sickness, there's this frame from the other side. That's varying levels of wellness. That's varying wellness of being healthy. It's like, you want to talk about codependency? I'll take your inventory. It's like you jump to a conclusion that you're doing something wrong. You know. I just finished talking about that in the workshop where I did the same thing where I, you know, something happened and I just immediately thought, oh fuck, I'm in trouble. You know, and it's like I mean, I think it's admirable that definitely take what Sue Ann has to say, and if I mean, if I have a relationship in which Dee Dee has a problem with it, I'm going to listen to that, and if there's a conflict there, I know where I'm going with that conflict, but. You know, you also just, you care about people.
Well, tell me if this is the emotional sobriety kind of hook, is that like, or what I see is my, the agenda that I've got to have. It's, mm-hmm. It's that I need to attempt to be as kind and giving to these two people that I care about as I can, while also not eclipsing myself. And kind of like letting myself become, you know, invisible in this equation. And, you know, it's like Alan and Herb are always saying, and you, it's like how to be for others without erasing myself and how to be for myself without erasing others. I mean, that's always the game, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say, Alan may disagree, but what you said is your goal was to be as good and as kind as you possibly can for each one of those people. I mean, this is a weird way to say it, but I go like, no, you need to be as absolutely kind and good as you can to one of those people, and you need to be kind and good to the other person. It's like you're going to go to every length for two different people that you're in a different kind of relationship. One's a relationship that's over, you know, I mean, be nice, be kind, you know, but you know, that's where you move on, you pass it along and wish her well, get support because it's hard to do that.
Well, see, I would say it this way, though, Patrick, it's the same thing Tom's saying. Bill talks about having relationships appropriate to those relationships. And what that means is that we differentiate. You are going to give something very different to your girlfriend than you're going to give it to your ex.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the energy, focus, the
priority.
There's no comparison. That's why I'm saying I don't know what the threat is. See what I'm saying? If you differentiate, there's no comparison.
Well, I'll work on that.
In my opinion, you bear down too hard on yourself. It's like you go there first. You're not going to have a problem. See, sometimes you're in a place where if you're afraid you're not going to be somebody who takes responsibility or for themselves, and if somebody were, if one of us were to say, hey, Patrick, I think you're missing something. You need to look at something. It's like, there is not a doubt in my mind that you, I don't care if you didn't even agree with us, that you would do exactly that. You would take a close look at it and do that. So, I mean, you're not in danger of being irresponsible here. It's like, it's in my opinion, you're not. So the idea is, you can, it's okay to see your health.
I'll never forget my dad telling me, or I was in a conversation with him before I got sober. And I borrowed a line from one of my favorite Michael Mann movies. I said, hey, Dad, I don't burn people. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm a mm-hmm. drunken idiot, but like, it's mm-hmm. just me, like I'm the only mm-hmm. one who, and he's just like, fuck off. Yes, you do. Yeah. You burn mm-hmm. people all the time. You know what I mean? You're just kind of, stumbling through life and you cause messes and other people have to deal with it. And I think I just always remembered that about how right he was and how deluded I was at the time. And, sometimes maybe I overcorrect, but like, yeah. I'm conscious of how I have the capacity to very much, pass responsibility torch off to somebody who should.
Well, double check yourself, but be fair. Be fair in your assessment of yourself. It's not fair if you're always leaning in, if you're biased against yourself in that way. It's like, just, sometimes it's okay to check. It's a little bit like what Alan was saying. It's okay to check and just kind of go like, no, I'm okay.
Well, here's what's cool. Well, one thing that's cool is I have a therapy appointment, couples therapy, with Sue Ann, our first on Monday. I'm very excited mm-hmm. about it. And that was actually a talk about comparison. Like in my past relationship, that was always like an uphill battle, is trying to kind of do some therapy, couples therapy with my partner.
Nice.
And here, this is something she initiated. And at the time she initiated it, we were actually doing pretty well, or we were pretty happy, and we're still happy. But like, it augurs well for the relationship that we're looking at this with a very kind of aligned perspective and kind of excited about the potential of it, rather than it's not like we have the tension or something and we have to go.
Well, I don't want to get my nose too far into this thing, but you might want to mention that she keeps you in the storage room.
that's item one, believe me. Do you and Dee Dee do therapy still?
No, we haven't in a while. Our longtime therapist, we'd have to find somebody new, because she died. It's like, I'm at the age now, Alan, you'll get that. It's like, somebody needed a therapist for somebody that was really kind of a going to be a tough customer, I think, and really needed somebody really sharp. And I went through my list of all the people I would refer to, and they were all dead. I know there's younger people who have the talent. I just don't know who they are. I'm just not up on who the best people are. So, yeah, but I tell you what, we did a lot of therapy. I still work off of a lot of our therapy. Most of my couples clients, and I hear you do some of that with Kempler too, Alan. I quote Mary Elizabeth, our couples therapist, but I quote her constantly when I'm working with couples, because I mean, sometimes I just use the principle of this is what she said to me, so this is what I'm going to say to you, because it doesn't need any improvement on my part. It just needs me to pass it along, because she taught me a lot of things. And I was always mad at her. It's like, and she never did anything wrong. I was mad because she was challenging me and pushing me to be a better person.
Hey, just for our edification, Tom, it's always entertaining. Is there like a particular relationship? And it could be anybody. It could be the mailman that mm-hmm. has been testing your emotional sobriety lately, that you could tell us a little story about.
How about that for an answer? It's like, I don't want to say much about it, because I think it's too easy for the anonymity to get lost, just in the circumstances. But I actually listened to your question, and I got the answer in my chest. It's like I've just felt, I thought, oh yeah. And all I had to do is like, what's that in my chest? Oh, that's it. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's just stuff that I need. And I can tell you what the issues are for me, though. It's like, it's just an attachment to wanting somebody to be different than they are and change faster than they're changing. Mm. You know, it's like, you know, and so whatever, you know, so I was, yeah, I'm looking at that.
I love that expression that it's in your chest, you know, like locating in the body, like, wherever the feeling
is. It's so important just to use your body to do that. You know, people forget that, or I don't know if they do or not, but Roger did somatic therapy forever, didn't he, Alan?
Well, yeah, way before it became popular.
Yeah, I'm no expert on any of that, but every time I ran into somebody who does some of that work, and my wife does a lot of that, she's just so intuitive in terms of picking up on pre-verbal things. It's like when we used to do groups together, she would be going someplace with somebody and I'd be going like, what the hell is she doing? I don't even know what she's talking about, you know? And before I knew it, this person was, you know, in the fetal position crying on the floor. And it's like, and she just had information that I didn't have. And it was, and because she could really tune into that infant pre-verbal stuff.
That's a gift. It is.
I mean, to me, I get stuck in the head. So I need words.
A gift for somebody to be able to do that.
I think I mentioned where I'm at, you guys. It's like now that I've gotten some emotional distance from Jess, I'm starting to look at that relationship and my participation in it a very, very different way and see that I didn't take care of myself in that marriage at all. No way. I made it all about her and I put myself not even second, but third or fourth in that marriage. And you know, for many reasons, that's not a good idea. I mean, many reasons. And I now know today, I'm not so sure she has the capacity to do it any different.
No problem.
Because of her struggles. So, you know, God bless her. I hope that she finds a way to make things work. And I'm just really grateful that Gail's still in my life, the babysitter. Mm-hmm. She's been so helpful with the girls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm pretty good, but I'm a guy raising two little girls and they need a good role model, female, right?
But you said the magic, you know, stuff is that perspective. It's like, you know, you get the space, you get the emotional space to do that and you get the guidance that you need and you can step back. And it really, I mean, literally looking at it from different angles. It's like, oh, when I look underneath here, you know, I say, you know, I didn't even realize that was there. So, yeah, I'm just so grateful to be somebody who basically has worked to the point where I have that humility and I consider that humility a strength in my life, not a weakness.
Well, you know, I don't know if this is of a piece with what we've been discussing, but it's on my mind. So we were talking with Carol Carter about, you know, maybe doing more bits and bobs of emotional sobriety programming for people and, you know, getting into like the outer limits of, you know, yeah, just this topic. And it just occurred to me just in talking to her about like how intent she is on keeping like a connection, a heart to heart connection with me and with everybody that's in her orbit. And yeah. And in this like community's orbit and like, it's like disarming at first because the topic that we interact over a lot is politics. Mm-hmm. And I, have so much of a stick up my ass about like so many things, occurring contemporaneously. I'm always wanting to talk about the thing. I'm always wanting to talk about like, what is it? The political issue, the external layer of like, you know, whatever the thing is. And she's always trying to get under the external layer and she's trying to, yeah, like aggressively maintain that human connection, maintain that heart to heart and to not let me drift too far into outer space, which, you know, if you look at these subjects for long enough, you know, you tend to like, things get pretty dark, you know what I mean? And I think that like the real empathetic people can like intuit that this is happening, you know, to others. And then they, you know, they're jumping over all the little hurdles in the relay to kind of like, you know, maintain a hold on this person that they care about and maintain that connection. And anyway, I just think it's remarkable. And it's like, it's something that if I take the time and look at it, it's not lost on me. And it's one of, and I think it's like one of my favorite human qualities. It's like, it's, I need more of that in my, the way I relate to other people, you know what I mean? The way that she relates to me. So
that's a, you really describe the aspects of Carol that exactly. She's challenging. I'm lazier in relationships than she is. And she's right there, and she does stuff. And it's like, it helps me because I tend to step up to it. It's through our connection as human beings that we're going to heal.
Well, in a sense, that's all we have. That's right. That's what I try to think about, is in a sense, all we have, if we're not the shot callers, you know, like, I'm not sure. I think that probably our world leaders, you know, they have there's a few things higher than like, you know, whatever it is, how they're in communication with their feelings. You know, I mean, they have responsibilities, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. but like for most of the rest of us, you know what I mean? Like all we have is our human connection and, you know, how good we are to our fellows and, you know, how we kind of maintain this fellowship that sustains us. And, you know, if that's being neglected, you know, I don't know what we're doing, you know.
Well, maybe I'm stepping over my own line here, but I'm just going like, the way I think about it in the most simple terms is you know, we live in a world in which, as far as I know, absolutely the vast majority of the world leaders in our, you know, we're still think it's a good idea sometimes just to kill a bunch of people. It's like, you know, and I'm going, I'm pretty sure that's a value that is not, I don't think we need to be operating out of that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a tall order, but it's like, it's not okay to go killing people.
Just the act of killing somebody, it's because you're abstracting them.
A thing, yeah. Somebody you would toss in the storage room.
Yeah, and then that capacity for abstraction is just as part of human nature as our capacity to kind of like conceive of ourselves as interconnected elements that cut against each other. And
yep.
I have a preference for sure.
Well, I'll just put a plug in here for my, go on my website. There's a page that's called Therapy for Politics. I've just written some stuff. It's a very, very, very small amount of stuff, but I've been writing it through the years, and it's about communication in politics, and you know, and I'm not saying there's anything particularly original in there, but I think there are some ideas there that are worth considering. So if anybody's interested in that, please go take a look. It's all free.
Tend your life. Tend your myth. Cultivate your narrative with whomever you are.